Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. Did you get any surprise visitors over the holidays? Well, we were delighted to have some of my offspring visiting, and we were out at public places with them a lot more than Bill and I usually are on our own. About 12 hours after we took the last of them to the airport, I began to think I had a sinus infection. Well, it turned out to be COVID. It took 4 years or so to get to us, but my husband and I both have been isolating at home since we tested positive. Not much you can do, just hunker down. It's a good thing I have lots to share with you this time. Today's episode of Desert Oracle Radio was produced by Ken Lane on December 29th, 2023. It's titled The Hermit's Life, and if you like where we live, I think you'll be able to relate. Ken's voice is better than mine right now, so enjoy.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. And if you are truly out in the wilderness tonight, the real backcountry, one thing you can't help but notice is that every sound is correct. For its place and time. The choruses of coyotes are never out of place, never out of tune. The owl hooting, the wind or lack thereof. The fire crackling, the sound of the creek gurgling around the little bend where maybe you caught a trout the afternoon prior. Or the tides of the sea. Or the little waves of a lake, if that's what's nearby. The sounds of Earth are one and only home, no matter what lies the aerospace hucksters tell you every couple of years. They make their trillions from constant war and the global police state, and it will always be so. Until one day not very far from now, when all of a sudden, it's not so. As the night gives way to the growing light on the eastern horizon, you may be lucky to hear the dawn chorus. The voices of the songbirds rising up, loudest in springtime, but always strong when the day will be sunny. Biologists down in Australia have even recorded fish singing a dawn chorus. We've been saying good morning for hundreds of millions of years, turns out ever optimistic. For some of us, it's not enough to visit some crowded national park full of bozos who can't drive, or to engage in some hideous online competition to reserve a campsite in the High Sierra maybe 8 months from now. And staying in some shoddy, overpriced, charmless stucco spec house from a few housing booms back? Well, that does not exactly get you back to the land, even if the owners have since renamed the place Desert Boogie Cabin or whatever. Whatever's not already taken on Instagram and the rental platforms. Desert Don't forget to do a few hours of house cleaning before you leave, unless you want to be charged hundreds of dollars more. Oh yeah, and you still have to pay the housekeeping fee either way. And the Airbnb fee and the county taxes for the crooks down the hill in San Bernardino. Don't forget them. And make sure to log out of Netflix or whatever on the mile-wide TV that is the main feature of every so-called wilderness retreat out here. Because if you don't log out, you're going to find your movie recommendations all filled up with the most sadistic visual representations of mass murder. Because that's what the meekest adult generation in American history loves to watch. Graphic, bloody, bonesaw murders of beautiful young actresses again and again. Usually following a pornographic scene. I wonder what's going on there psychologically. Nothing good. For some of us, the only peace of mind comes in absolute solitude in those still numerous places where the calamitous noise of our civilization is mostly kept at bay. Ask anybody who completed a long hike like the PCT up the western spine of America. Ask them what they loved most. They probably won't say the ravens laughing at them all the time, but we learn to be good sports. What makes a long through hike such an unforgettable time is the solitude, they will often say, the quiet. Not the absence of sound, that's rarely what anyone means, but the absence of the sounds of civilization. That awful, unending racket. Machines and advertising and the sirens night and day. Helicopters, air conditioners. The maddening and desperate beeps and blurts burping out of every piece of garbage device. Little sounds that are shrill and urgent. That's why the bicyclist from the city had to die. The one found with his mountain bicycle wrapped entirely around his throat. You see, he had battery-powered speakers mounted on the front of this stupid child's bicycle that he paid $1,000 for. And these speakers were playing some kind of twee pop music at full volume on God's Holy Road, a dirt trail through a national forest. Of course, I didn't kill him. I simply willed it to happen, which is still legal for now. Technically, a bear ate most of him. And the great bear's willpower is much stronger than the willpower of any mere mortal. The bicycle was just collateral damage, like crinkling the tinfoil around a street taco. Smashed up that Bluetooth handlebar speaker real good, too. Always smash Bluetooth speakers. That's one of the rules of the woods. There's an old saying about bears, and your recommended course of action should you encounter an angry or hungry bear in the wild. It goes like this. Brown bear, run. Black bear, fight. White bear, say goodnight. And then there are those who just cannot get by with the paltry week or maybe 2 weeks of vacation in nature, or the occasional disappearance for a three-month hike or fishing trip or cross-ocean sailing journey or year-long snowshoe and ski expedition over Greenland or whatever. It's just not enough. Especially in the reduced circumstances of Western civilization today. Really, all the world's civilizations, they're all... Well, I'm looking at this report here from the paper, and it says they're all garbage. Nothing to recommend. Japan has held on to more of its soul than most societies, that's true. There's nearly always a Shinto nature temple or beautiful forest within range. Scandinavia has somehow worked out a culture of nature and sauna and long holidays into the reality of their corporate commerce world. That's also true. There may be another couple of examples. Feel free to not write in with those, but mostly... Look-alike garbage all around the world. Sounds bad, looks worse, police and thieves. America, being the newer civilization, has served as template for all that's wrong with modern society, and it has never done a very good job of making life pleasant or peaceful for its non-plutocrat masses. Beyond the short burst of beautiful civic parks and then national wilderness parks that blossomed in cities and countryside from about 1858 through the New Deal. I mean the divinely inspired work of Frederick Law Olmsted, John Muir, Minerva Hamilton Hoyt, and their ilk. So, from the earliest days of European colonization, both white and black frequently escaped to join the Indians. From the failed Roanoke colony, which was founded and poorly governed by my ambitious ancestor, Ralph Lane, to Jamestown and the puritanical outpost of New England, one of the first things many new Americans did was run to the wilderness, where the lucky ones were adopted into Indian tribes and their easy living villages. Eventually, the American government and its military did away with the wild Indians themselves, with the bonus of cutting off white and black Americans from their only alternative society. And so the habit of becoming a hermit became a particular American passion for the outcasts and the oddballs. Hermits had become a fad in Egypt of the early Christian era, but that only came with the nature and body-hating Christian fanaticism of the Desert Fathers. This was not the American way. American hermits had a very different intent when the hermit life took root here 1,000 years later. And this hermit habit has persisted throughout the 4+ centuries of North American colonization and up to the present day, including such storied American names as Henry David Thoreau, Huckleberry Finn, Georgia O'Keeffe, Marta Beckett, Ted Kaczynski. Conventional religious beliefs are few and far between with such people. It's not what the wilderness hermit is looking for. A rule book. They are people who've seen through the hollow promises and threats of monotheism. The western mountains and deserts of minimal interest to farmers and limited interest to everybody else beyond mining capitalists, loggers, and the mostly unpeopled open range of cattle ranchers have long attracted the kind of people we call hermits. For a while now, I've been collecting their stories from books and newspaper clippings, and tonight I'm going to read a few of the latter to inspire you. Should the hermit's life be your calling? This comes from the Reno Gazette in 1918. Man missing 25 years is found by daughter as Hermit of Desert. Al Donahue, located at Antelope, through Nevada cattleman, but Donahue won't return to old Grass Valley home. Al Donahue, desert hermit of Antelope, abandoned mining camp of Nye County, who dropped out of sight of his family a quarter of a century ago during the goldfield boom, has been located by his daughter through the offices of Ira Murdoch. For years, the manager of the Goldfield office of the United Cattle Company, and now located in Sacramento. Boy, that's a run-on sentence. That needs an editor. Confused. Pronouns did not start in this decade. But he, this would be Al Donahue, refuses to leave the desert. The daughter is Mrs. Delano Wilson. Women didn't have their first names in the paper in this time, a century ago. I should have rewritten this whole article. Who would know? You would not know. You're not going to look it up. It's a radio. It's a podcast. It's background noise. She's a telephone operator and a hotel senator in Sacramento. And Murdoch has made his home there. Where? The hotel senator in Sacramento? No. It's the abandoned mining camp in Nye County, Nevada. When I read these things and collect these things, I edit them in my mind as I read them. I had to read the Harry Potter books to my sons when they were young decades ago. And when they went back to read the books themselves, they were surprised because they were so much better. As I edited the terrible books on the fly. Murdoch, who roved the desert in search of wandering beef for many years, said he believed her father might be an aged desert rat he had met a few months ago. He was shown a photograph of the man taken some 27 years ago. Journalism may be the first draft of history, but it could always use a second draft. Mrs. Wilson and her husband arrived in the old camp and a family reunion took place. When the time for parting came, the Wilsons asked the old man to accompany them back to California, offering him a comfortable home at Grass Valley, his birthplace, but he refused, saying he preferred the desert and its solitude. After Donahue left his family and went to southern Nevada, he worked for a time in Goldfield at mining, then drove cattle for several outfits and prospected during his leisure time. He has spent virtually 10 years in a desert cabin at Antelope and etc. There will be more visits to the old man, it was said, but it is unlikely if he ever left the desert. Washington Times, July of 1919, Hermit of Desert dislikes city. chose a picture of long-haired, long-bearded William Pester. William Pester, hermit of Palm Springs, California, recently visited Chicago and quickly decided that city life was not to his liking. The rush and bustle and the congestion and the crowds got so on his nerves that he cut his visit to a few hours' inspection of the city. His strange attire, long hair, and beard attracted much attention. Pester has been roaming the California deserts for many years and is known as the Desert Hermit. He was also known as one of the Nature Boys. Inspiration for the song that Nat King Cole made famous but did not write. And here are a couple of other Tockwitz Canyon hermits who were listed in an old Desert Sun article. E.J. Fitzgerald, discovered living near the old Tockwitz River in 1919. Friends called this Fitzgerald the Hermit. Oh, another creative nickname. The local magazine at the time, The Villager, did a story on him, saying he drank a quart of milk a day for lunch, but later changed that to a daily can of beer. He died in 1955 and was buried at the old Wellwood Memorial Cemetery, age unknown. Bob Hepburn, Mountain Bob, was the 1990s equivalent of the Hermit. A Desert Sun story in 1996 reported he had been living alone in Tockwitz Canyon for 12 years with no modern conveniences. And here's one from 1978 from the Chicago Sun-Times. Activist nun to become hermit in Arizona desert. That's what they did to activist nuns back then. I will lead you into the desert, and there I shall speak to your heart. Those words, first spoken to the prophet Hosea centuries before the birth of Christ, now speak to the condition of Sister Gabrielle Herbers. After years of being in the forefront of the struggle for social justice, the spirited 58-year-old nun will soon become a hermit at the Desert House of Prayer in Cortero, Arizona, 15 miles north of Tucson. As the dove flies, that's a long way. Oh, that's cute. Quote, that's a long way spiritually and geographically from her old office at the Alliance to End Repression in downtown Chicago. And here's one from Gerlach, Nevada. You ever been to Gerlach? If you've been to Pyramid Lake or maybe gone to the Burning Man Festival up there, you've been through Gerlach. Associated Press, from 1978. The activity at Ray Duffield's Little Joe Opal Mine is proof people will go to the ends of the earth in search of riches. And this place is the end of the earth. You drive about as far as you can in northern Nevada and take a left. The pile of rocks, that's the mine. The four-room cabin belongs to Duffield and his wife, Marge. Using first names for wives at this point. And they're living their retirement in the kind of solitude you'd expect on a deserted island. It's a hermit-like existence for the Duffields. There's no running water, no telephone, no electricity. Water comes from a nearby desert spring, 10 gallons at a time. Ray charges diggers $5 a day to poke through the rubble looking for that big find. The most visible wildlife is a buzzard. It is a four-wheeler's paradise. When you look on the horizon of the desert, you expect to see a wagon train. led by Ward Bond. Who knows? Lost cultural reference. Once to Gerlach, population maybe 250, you head out into the desert 40 miles to Black Rock Point. The nearest neighbors are in Gerlach. Diggers are advised to make the trek in the spring and summer. When the storms come, vehicles often bog down in the desert lake bed, which must be crossed to get to the mine. Though the lake bed road is pleasant when firm. Mountain roads which must be driven are like something out of a television commercial showing how much punishment a tire can take. People from as far away as New York City have visited the Little Joe, but most come from the West. One busy weekend, there were more than 100 diggers probing the rubble. Duffield is a native of Camden, New Jersey. He eventually settled in Nevada's capital, Carson City, where he worked as a state highway designer. Then he went into the desert. Quote, "I am a loner. I love it out here. It's a bit more of a problem for my wife, but she is getting to like it. We play chess and cards and listen to the radio. There's always something to do and we keep busy. Now I dig in the mine every other day. We are coming to town once a week, but that is getting old." Isaac, and across the great Mojave Wilderness, you've been listening to Desert Oracle Radio. On Friday nights in the Mojave High Desert, you can hear us at 10 p.m. on KCDZ 107.7 FM with a special bonus episode at 10:30. You don't get that on a podcast. Because you don't know which one I chose for the special bonus episode. As we go into what will surely be a chaotic year in the public realm, with various systems collapsing with increasing frequency, remember that every year comes with plenty of bad news, plenty of strife and misery around the world. Well, that'd be cruel to leave it there, wouldn't it? But you can acknowledge the troubles out there while still appreciating the blessed parts of your own life. Like when people used to say a couple of years ago, "Well, I had a pretty good pandemic. Those stimulus checks were nice." I may or may not return to the hermit tales I put together for tonight. I always have a couple of extra stories or bits or whatever for the show, but the time flies. May the new year bring good health and prosperous times to you and your friends and even your family if they deserve it. Probably not your neighbors, though. Thank you for listening. Enjoy your new year weekend in the desert if you're lucky enough to do that. And good night from the Voice of the Desert.
I tried to find information on any Montana hermits, but haven't come up with anything but a Catholic hermit who took his vows in Helena, and a hermit in a swamp from an old Phillipsburg newspaper, but that guy was not from Montana. Well, maybe someone should write a book about some individuals in our area history. I guess by definition, they don't want to be known, but I have heard some legends. Do you know of any? Please, no Unabombers, okay? Well, I imagine we are at the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio. Our show continues with a story of Bozeman, Fort Ellis, and more from Marlene at the Gallatin History Museum.
We're going to talk about the history of Bozeman, and I say that Montana is a late bloomer, meaning that it didn't develop very quickly. It was the Wild West for quite a while, and by that I mean we didn't have infrastructure, you know, as far as cities and roads and things like that that were built. Until gold is found. Mm. And gold is found in 1863 in the Bannock area. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, all kinds of people are flocking to this area that has no infrastructure. There isn't even a great trail to get there. Mm-hmm. And once you get there, there is no city, so you can't buy supplies. And you're living kind of in tents and kind of ramshackle little huts, and it's just a big mess. John Bozeman came during this time period, and a lot of the founders of Bozeman came for the gold rush. I want to add that the gold rush is during the Civil War. Mm. And so we're getting a lot of people who are just disenfranchised from the war, deserters. We also are getting people that are done with the gold rush in California, because that one started in 1849 and kind of played itself out, and by this time they're looking for another place to mine. So those miners are coming from California, and of course, who follows the miners but the criminal element that mm-hmm. just want to take mm-hmm. the treasure from the miners. Mm-hmm. And so we've got all that coming to this area, and John Bozeman is one of them. He comes, and he doesn't have much success quickly at mining. Apparently, he left his family in Georgia. He had a wife and some daughters, and interestingly enough, his father had left his family when he was growing up mm-hmm. to go to California and never came back. Mm-hmm. So he was just kind of following in his father's footsteps. Mm-hmm. John Bozeman was a very good, handsome man. Mm-hmm. I will say that I consider him pretty brave. But he was a ladies' man. And he liked the ladies, and the ladies liked him back. Mm-hmm. And some of the women of the early camps, you know, would kind of notice him. Anyway, Bozeman quickly decided that mining wasn't for him, and he and a guy named Jacobs decided that they were going to develop a better way to get to the mining camp. And before, what they would do is they'd follow the Oregon Trail, they cut off on the Bridger Trail. Now this wasn't a great way because it was mountainous mm-hmm. and there wasn't any great waterways. Mm-hmm. And so it was hard on the livestock. So they developed a trail that is, as you can see, a lot straighter. They named it the Bozeman Trail. And it basically followed Lewis and Clark's route. And so they're following waterways, you know, follows the Yellowstone River, a great way to water your livestock. But there's one big issue. They're going through the Indian treaty land. Mm-hmm. And the Indians were not happy about the wagon trains going through their hunting land. And so they would attack. And so it got the nickname, quickly, the Bloody Bozeman Trail, because a lot of people didn't even make it. It didn't take long to figure out that, is it better to save 2 weeks, because this saved 2 weeks off of the Bridger Trail. Mm-hmm. Do you want to save 2 weeks, or do you want to get there alive? Mm-hmm. But before that was even decided, Bozeman's next thought was, when he gets to the kind of the mountains, you know, on the east side here, mm-hmm. and he's looking down into this great fertile valley, that'd be a great place for a town. And my wagon trains could stock up there. You know, since there's really not much at the gold fields, this would be a good place for my wagon trains to stop and kind of stock up a little bit and then continue on. And so he and a couple others that he met in Virginia City kind of platted out. And those three were obviously Bozeman, Beale, and Rouse, which we have streets named after all of our founders. And they kind of plotted it out, and the little city is started. Now, of course, it's a struggling little city at first, and Bozeman didn't really get to enjoy his namesake town because they named the town after him. He enjoyed it for about 3 years.
Oh, just 3 years.
3 years.
Huh.
And then he is murdered.
Oh, okay.
Along the Yellowstone River, he is murdered. Now, he went with a new partner, and this partner's name is Thomas Cover. And Thomas Cover and him supposedly are drumming up some business to kind of help the local ranchers and farmers. And they're planning to go to some of the other army forts to see if they could get contracts to sell, you know, the goods. Well, they didn't obviously get very far. And Thomas comes back a couple days later. He has some kind of powder burns on his shoulder. And he says, "We were ambushed by the Blackfeet Indians. And they shot John Bozeman in the chest." Well, the bigwig of the town was Nelson Story. And he sent his foreman from his cattle ranch that was in Livingston to check out the story. And the foreman came back and reported to him, yeah, John Bozeman got shot in the chest. But I don't think that it was the Blackfeet, because he wasn't scalped.
Mm-hmm.
And the foreman said, I looked around their little camp, and there was no sign of Indian horses, or even signs of Indians. You know, the only horse prints they saw were ones with shoes on. And the Indians didn't, you know, put shoes on their horses. So today we kind of think that it really was his partner who actually murdered him, not the Blackfeet. Though if you go to the Sunset Hills, where he's buried now in the area where Nelson Story's family is, he had the body dug up from along where he was killed and brought it and had it reburied in Sunset Hills. Nelson Story, I believe, knew the truth all along, because he had an angle. He knew what would happen next, And what he thought was going to happen actually did happen.
Which was?
The people of Bozeman never were told the truth. Mm-hmm. They're led to believe that the Blackfeet Indians are coming for them.
Oh, no.
They're dangerous, and we need help. Mm-hmm. And this is hard to believe, but only 3 months after John Bozeman was killed, the army sends a contingency in. And 3 months. I mean, our government doesn't work that fast anymore.
Nope.
And they build Fort Ellis, which was just 2 miles to the east of here.
Mm-hmm.
Close enough that, of course, they're buying their supplies from this little fledgling town.
Mm-hmm.
And who is acting as the middleman for the farmers and the ranchers who are selling their goods? Nelson Story.
Oh.
And Nelson Story is supposedly the first millionaire of Montana. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, he made a lot of good moves, but one of the things he was noted for doing was for overcharging and under-delivering to the army in particular.
Yeah.
And so he made a lot of money off of the army being here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, but it did kind of infuse the economy of this little struggling town. Not only were the ranchers and the farmers helped out, but you can imagine the restaurant owners and boarding houses and bars, of course. In those days, we had lots of bars even then. And, of course, with all these soldiers that can just walk into town when they have mm-hmm. time off, we now have a red light district that mm-hmm. springs up on the north end.
And I've heard that some of the wealthier men in Bozeman actually invested in properties that became, that were bordellos or something, some of that red light district. Is that true?
I don't know that. There may have been one or two, but I don't mm-hmm. think that was a common thing. I know some of the madams actually were able to kind mm-hmm. of start it out as, you know, prostitutes and earned enough money that they mm-hmm. were able to, you know, buy some of their own bordellos. But none of them lasted very long.
Yeah.
I have to say that even the madams didn't seem to live very long.
Yeah.
It was a hard life. Yeah.
So is it suspected then that John Bozeman's buddy killed him?
Yes,
let's
go back to that.
Okay.
There were rumors in town, and again, we'll never really know, but the rumor around town was John Bozeman would appear at his partner's house when he knew his partner wasn't there to visit the wife. So there was the speculation that he was having an affair
mm-hmm.
with his partner's wife, and that'd be a reason to get rid of him. But he also financially, you know, Thomas Cover not only got his wife back, but he also, you know, I would say, you know, made out with the investments that they had.
Sounds like it, yeah.
Yeah.
Where is he buried?
So he left a few years later, kind of cashed out and said, you know, he left pretty wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
Went to Southern California. And not much longer after that, he disappeared.
Oh.
And they never found his body.
Oh, my.
But I read, I don't know if it's true or not, that someone found his ring in the deserts, in the desert of Southern California.
Hmm.
But I don't know.
Wow.
So I would imagine if his body was never found, there isn't a grave somewhere.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, that's the beginning of, I would say, Bozeman.
And the site of Fort Ellis Isn't there a little marker along one of the frontage roads?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it is, if you happen to know where the Sheep Ranch is, when you are on the interstate coming mm-hmm. into town, mm-hmm. it would be on the right-hand side. You can see the sheep. If you go right behind that on that frontage road, you can see there is a marker and a sign. There is nothing left to the mm-hmm. fort mm-hmm. anymore. Mm-hmm. But there is a marker, and I think it's on MSU land. I believe MSU owns some experimental fields in that area. And so, yeah. Okay, so the fort only lasted for 19 years. The Blackfeet Indians never did attack. There never was any attack on the city. And by this time, in 1872, we now have Yellowstone Park, the very first national park, is established. The soldiers at Fort Ellis never participated in the Indian Wars. They weren't at Little Bighorn. But they did do some discovery work, exploration and of Yellowstone Park. And, of course, Yellowstone at the beginning, there wasn't a park service. Mm-hmm. That was developed later. So it was the Army that, you know, was kind of in charge of the administration of the park. And so we had the parks. We now have tourism coming through, mostly rich people from the East Coast or internationally. We had people coming. Then in the mid-1880s, we now have the railroad cut through. The Bozeman Tunnel is worked on in 1884, cut through in 1885. We now have the railroad coming through here. And, of course, that always helps a town grow. And I'm going to say the third thing that really helped was we got the very first land grant college.
Really?
Which was Montana State University. Mm-hmm. And I like to say we beat the Grizz by 1 hour because Montana, University of Montana also was a land grant. Mm-hmm. college, but they did our paperwork first, mm-hmm. and then an hour later, you know, they did their paperwork. So we both came into the system at the same time. But so having a college, you know, was a big boon to, I think, our economy. And some people say it was like a booby prize, you know, that we got the land-grant college because there were a number of cities that were vying to be capital of, you know, the brand new state that, you know, and so who was going to be the capital? And so, of course, Virginia City wanted to be, and we've got, you know, Helena, and we've got Bozeman, we've got Missoula, we've got Butte, you know, and everybody kind of wants to be capital. And so, you know, Missoula and Bozeman got the colleges, and Helena got the capital. And in the long run, maybe having colleges actually help cities grow even more.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
So, anyway. So there really isn't a need anymore for the Army being there. Mm-hmm. You know, we're growing and we're thriving, and there isn't any danger of the Indians, mm-hmm. which of course got pushed to reservations. Mm. So.
Hey, did you catch that desert connection when Marlene talked about Thomas Cover's ring? If not, you can go to the kgvm.org archives to listen to this episode again. My thanks to Ken Lane for his work on Desert Oracle Radio. And thanks to Marlene and the Gallatin History Museum. Thank you, Gallatin Valley and the world, for listening. Remember to call and leave a message or text about anything on your mind, including your favorite hermit. The number is 1-406-404-6246. Remember to spread the word that you can hear this program on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. Our past Desert Oracle radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. I wonder if that Duffield place is still open. I wonder if I can see the solar eclipse from there in April.
I may be verging on decrepitude, but I am not yet dead.
Thanks, Sister Monica Joan. I feel the same way. Here's a little music to take us out. This is Mojave Desert by Leviro. He doesn't mention Tom Cover's ring, but I hope they found it. Till next week, stay well and sweet dreams.
Take a ride, I can feel it now, it's time.
I can feel it now, it's time.
I know a spot not far away where we can let our dreams fall into place. In the middle of the Mojave Desert, let's just build a moment we can remember. So let's not think about our pain, all of the choices and mistakes.
Choices and mistakes.
Oh, let's be in the here and now. Nothing here can slow us down.